Maria Callas may have died in 1977, but she remains a compelling figure in opera and the wider world even today. Callas was known for her musical and acting skills that span styles and her complete dedication to her art. And our next guest believes those are some of the reasons she remains a figure of great importance. Patrick Byrne was in Milwaukee last week to give a pre-show talk at a performance of the Milwaukee Chamber Theater's Masterclass, a play about Callas's time late in life that she taught at Juilliard. Patrick Byrne tells Lake Effect's Bonnie North why he thinks people still flock to Maria Callas.
First of all, the charisma is evident in the recordings, which that doesn't happen very often with any opera singer. You feel so much when she sings a simple phrase. She infuses each word of the text with passion or appropriate emotion. I think that's one of her secrets. And thank God she was still singing when videos were in their infancy. So we do have three of her Toscas in the second act. Unfortunately, they're all three the second act from the Ed Sullivan Show. We also have the complete second act from the Paris Gala in front of the President of France. And we have the Franco Zeffirelli production from the Royal Opera House, which he designed specifically for her. And if you see that and the hair on your head doesn't stand up, there's something wrong with you.
Opera singers have a reputation of living larger than life. You know, they certainly sing about larger than life things, but somehow she seems to have captured the public imagination
Yes.
in a way that other opera singers haven't seemed to do.
Well, part of that was when she did the dramatic weight loss in 1954. And got down to a model figure. She's a 5'8" woman, beautiful Mediterranean features, black eyes, a strong nose and jaw, beautiful mouth, dazzling smile, gorgeous hair, and went from dressing rather provincially once she became a star. Puccini's granddaughter was a stylist, created clothing. Her name was Madame Bicchi. And she got a hold of Maria Callas and literally transformed her. And it's interesting because one of Callas's role models was Audrey Hepburn. And you can see it in the hair and the eye makeup. She's copied a lot of things Audrey did in the movies at the time.
Do you think the fact that she was almost a rags-to-riches kind of figure, that that captured the public imagination
Yes.
as well?
Yes, because she worked so hard to make it. She really did. She was unattractive, insecure, very heavy, had a terrible home life, a very domineering stage mother, almost like Gypsy. Her father was kind of not there most of the time. She didn't get along with her sister. And the mother pushed her into the conservatoire in Athens at the age of 13 and told them she was 17. But she was tall and fully formed, and they believed it. So she was singing opera on stage with a professional company at the age of 17. She did Tosca, which is unheard of.
Do you think that had something to do with her voice not lasting as long as it could have? Did she start too early?
No, I don't really think so. I think her technique was phenomenal. She studied with a very famous La Scala coloratura called Elvira de Hidalgo, who was known for singing Rosina and the Barber of Seville and Lucia. Callas had a very heavy voice, and she studied bel canto, which does not mean beautiful singing. It means the right technique. And she learned to lighten this gigantic voice, and she could do all of the trills and the runs and the glissandos, which big voices like Birgit Nilsson could never manage. So actually, her singing technique was correct. What happened was at the end of her career, she got involved in what we used to call the jet set society and stopped practicing. Singers are athletes. You can't do it. That's why Nureyev danced right up till the time he died practically, even though he was ill.
So the fact that she wasn't practicing meant that when she went on stage, she had to push?
She had to push, and she hadn't maybe sung for 6 months, and she'd do a concert. And her nerves got frayed at the end. And being nervous, as you know, either as an actor or a singer, you don't support properly because you don't breathe properly.
You tighten up.
You tighten up.
Yeah.
And she did push, and you can hear it. It's interesting, though. In 1969, she started restudying with Elvira de Hidalgo after all those years. And I have some outtakes from EMI studio recordings of her practicing, and the voice was exquisite. But she would not sing that way again. She went back to the old bad habits of when she got frightened, she'd push. And it's really a shame. She was her own worst enemy.
You mentioned she started out with this big, big voice, like a Birgit Nielsen type.
Actually, almost a contralto.
Really?
Yes. She could sing mezzo roles beautifully. Her chest voice was thunderous. They described it almost like it was in a well. She could drop down and then hit an F above E, which how many singers do that?
So a huge range.
Huge range.
A big voice. Could she have sung Wagner? Could she have
she
sung
She did sing
stuff?
Wagner
did
in her
she?
Youth. She sang Parsifal, which she said, I manage the screams very well, I think. She did Isolde, Tristan and Isolde. In fact, when she was singing Brunhilde at La Fenice in Venice, the woman who was going to sing Puritani the next week became ill and they couldn't find a substitute. Maria had never seen the score. She was young then. Tullio Serafin, who was her mentor, said, you will learn the score in a week and you will sing it. And she said, I can't. He said, you will. And she did. And it created a sensation. That was the beginning of the career.
How did you get interested in her? You know, why are you the person who's kind of carrying the flame forward?
Oh, I was 15. I had been exposed to opera from an uncle I had who was from Palermo. He had a niece named Antonietta Scalia, who was an opera singer. Probably wasn't famous, but he had 78 recordings of her, and they would play them in the house. And they were light opera, Italian songs, you know. And I was fascinated with the voice. And my parents both liked classical music, more like operetta. The Red Mill, that sort of thing. But I got used to hearing that sound. And at the time, we couldn't afford to buy LPs when I was young, and I would go to the library, and you could check out an opera. And you had to keep it there. They had a record player and earphones. I had not really heard of Maria Callas at that point, but I had heard Lili Pons on the radio singing Lucia, and I liked the music, and I didn't know it could be sung any other way, and I checked out the recording of Maria Callas. I think it was from 1953, one of her first EMIs, Lucia. And as soon as I put it on and heard her voice, I thought, oh, this is very different. I don't know if I like it. But you know what? I sat there for 2 hours, followed the libretto with the translation, and when I got done, I thought, this is what Lucia is about. It's not a twittering bird in a cage. That was the difference, and I was hooked after that. And then when I was 16, I got to go see Maria Callas in Kansas City at the Midland Theater. She was on tour. She was doing a world tour of concerts, and I managed to get a back row seat for, I think, $2.75. And interestingly enough, there was a bomb threat. Some crank had called in and said there was a bomb under the stage, so she came out, sang one aria, and they cleared the theater. And they made us all go outside till the bomb squad came and cleared the theater and walked back on. And we sat there for the rest of the evening. Harry Truman, the president, was there.
My goodness.
Yeah. And then I really had the bug once I saw her in person.
You mentioned EMI, and I understand that there are some reissues coming out. What's going on with that?
Well, Warner Brothers acquired EMI, which kind of alarmed all the opera fans at first, but God bless them, they have remastered all of the Callas material, everything she recorded for EMI, and are issuing it in a deluxe set, and it should be out in about a month. So we're all looking forward to that. So save your pennies. It's expensive.
But they took the original
Masters. They got the original discs. Instead of when EMI remastered a lot of her things in the 80s, they took second generation, third generation things. And as you know, they deteriorate. So they've gone back to the originals. And I haven't heard them, but I understand they're brilliant.
Will you get a review copy as the president of the organization?
I don't know. Actually, I belong to the Maria Callas International Club, which, by the way, issues a gorgeous magazine 3 times a year. To the members. They have 1,500 members worldwide. Pavarotti was a member. Lots of famous retired opera singers belong to it. And the fact that they can still find material to talk about, because people are coming forward with photographs of the day I met Maria Callas and she was so nice, or the day I met Maria Callas and she scared me to death, or, you know, that sort of thing.
So there are still things surfacing.
She's still alive to a lot of people. Yeah.
To me, that's what's so fascinating is that 37 years after her death, she really hasn't died.
No. And I don't think she ever will. And just so many young singers have been influenced by her, for better or worse, unfortunately. I think she brought drama back to opera. She brought – now, I don't want to say reality because she didn't believe in reality. She said it's theater. But she brought back a level of involvement that I don't think hardly any singers have ever matched.
Do you think that that is something that modern-day opera has taken from her? That's a lesson that they've brought forward?
Yes. Looks, definitely. You no longer have the portly soprano who marches to the front of the stage and watches the conductor, irregardless of the fact that there's a sword fight going on behind her. Callas was more fascinating when she wasn't singing, when she was watching her partner do something. If you look at the existing tapes, she's so involved in what they're doing. You believe. And it's in her face. And that, I think, is – I don't think you can be taught that. That is something that comes from the inside.
And that's something that really describes why we're still fascinated with her.
Yes.
And why she's still so important.
And still controversial because the voice offends some people and absolutely thrills each other. I belong to several groups and, you know, classical online groups, and they fight and argue to this day like she was still alive.
Well, I do have to ask what you think of the Terrence McNally play, Masterclass, just from your perspective and, and you know, not this production, but just the play in general.
It was extremely controversial when it first hit the boards, and it won several awards. Zoe Caldwell did a magnificent performance of Maria Callas. It's theater, and if I have all of the tapes of Callas teaching at Juilliard, which this is based on. There's 21 hours of it, and she does a lot of singing on the tapes, but her teaching methods are what a professional teacher would do. That wouldn't be interesting as a play unless you were a real opera aficionado. McNally was smart enough to make it theater, and you have to make it a little controversial. And he did play on the fact that she could be, as she said, a prima donna. Mm-hmm. She loved to pronounce it that way.
Prima.
And she's a prima donna assoluta, the absolute prima donna. But she was. We wouldn't have loved her as much if she wasn't.
So you like the play? You enjoy it as a piece of theater?
Very much, depending on who's doing it.
Yes.
I've seen Angela do it. I saw her do it for 2 weeks because I hosted a Callas exhibit at the Missouri Repertory Theater when she was playing in Kansas City. So I got to see her every night. And she is Callas. I mean, she's the incarnation physically, dramatically. I've seen Faye Dunaway do it, and the less said about that, the better. So Zoe Caldwell do it, magnificent. Patti LuPone was magnificent. You need the temperament. You don't just act that part. You have to inhabit it.
Well, Patrick, welcome to Milwaukee.
Thank you.
And it is such a pleasure to have you in the studio. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Kansas City native Patrick Byrne is an international expert on opera singer Maria Callas. He co-authored a biography called The Colors of Callas, Reflections of an Icon, and is a Belgian Opera Guide critic. He spoke with Bonnie North last week when he was in town for a talk before Milwaukee Chamber Theater's production of Masterclass, which runs through this weekend. That's all for the Monday edition of Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Tyke. Great to have you listening today, and I sure hope you'll be able to tune in again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Coming up at noon today, it's Here and Now from WBUR and NPR, but right now it's 11 o'clock and Fresh Air is next.